Okay, we are on week number 7, command number 5. We're going to look at the facts of the law. And as we do that, Exodus chapter number 20, we'll read the law in its entirety in regards to commandment number 5. And you'll obviously chapter number 20. And it says this, "Honor thy father and thy mother, that thy days may be long upon the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee." Now, before we even enter into the notes and start to talk about this, let me ask you this question. I want your input on this, because there is just a touch of controversy in regards to this concept. Do you feel, and I want you to give me your ideas from Scripture, do you feel that it is a promise or a principle that thy days may be long upon the earth? Is that a promise from God, straightforward, that if someone is honoring their parents, that they will have a long life? Or is it a principle? In other words, it will happen, but there might be exceptions to that. And so give me your opinion. Give me your ideas, thoughts, and maybe concepts from Scripture.
It's a promise.
Okay, and why do you say so?
Because it says in Ephesians, it's a promise.
Okay.
This is the first commandment with
Okay. Anybody else want to give into that? Is a commandment with promise to everybody, no matter what?
Yeah.
Why so?
Because people die young all the time. Honor their father and mother.
Okay, so
there be an accident, or
so if we're going to take this as an absolute promise, what we're saying is, if someone dies young, they did not honor their parents.
Right. Okay, so it was a promise. What's wrong? I mean, really, you could have called God a liar and said it was a promise. Right? What was wrong? Didn't they get lengthened from what they would have been? God knows, not me.
But I guess the question, if it is a promise, the question is, if someone dies young, we have to assume that they didn't honor their parents. If the promise is long life to someone who honors their parents, then we would have to also conclude that if someone dies young, that they did not. Yes?
I don't think that we have to necessarily assume that they did not honor their parents, because if it's conceivable that if they were to have died younger, but because they honored their parents or extended their life, maybe the Lord initially had given them 20 years, but because they honored their mother and father, give them an extra 10 years, which in a sense would have been an extra 50%.
Okay, so you're saying that it is, that long life is perspective. So that thy days may be long upon the earth, or upon the land that the Lord thy God giveth thee. So we're saying that possibly this is all perspective. The promise is actually perspective. Someone who only lives 10 years, we would say that they honored their parents, but based on perspective, they didn't live to be 70, which in my opinion would be long life.
Also, length of days and long life can be separated. Length of days could also mean that God will bless your time of your day and allow you to get more things done. And in Proverbs chapter 3, the length of days and long life, and peace shall they have to be, and that's if you keep commandments. Paraphrasing the first verse a little bit, but there could be another way to distinguish the difference there. And, the actual commandments, when it says that thy days may be long on the land, so you could read that each particular day will be length, maybe not in hours, but in capability.
Okay. Jen?
We would have to say that 33 years would be long days, because we know absolutely that Christ honored his mother and father. So those 33 years that he lived would be his days of life. I mean, if that promise holds true, he's our example.
Okay, so it's not exactly a promise for 70 years, 80 years, 90 years. It's a promise of long life based on perspective. You know, when I say perspective, what I'm saying is, someone who lives 70 years, we would say that's a good life. 95 years, I just met a 95-year-old on Sunday. Pat brought his girlfriends with him to church, all 12 of them or so, and met a 95-year-old. I would say that's a long life. So when someone dies at the age of 33, it's perspective. That was a long life based on perspective. Is that how we can take that promise?
Would it be my principal and promise? As in, more or less, like you're talking about perspective. Like, I mean, I'm my father and mine, it's always a good thing. I mean, children obey your parents. So the other honor is a lot that's in obeying. Is obeying follow the promise too?
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the question, yeah. I mean, maybe it is. Go ahead, Annie.
No, I think it shows the Jewishness of the law in that it's saying the daily law in the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee. He hasn't given us any land. We're strangers and pilgrims. The land he's given us will be heaven, so the daily law is there, but I think it's showing.
How was it reiterated in Ephesians?
Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor thy father and thy mother, which is the first commandment of the promise.
So the promise is not to us then. Does it transfer to us? Because we don't have the land.
I think the commandment that were given, this is the first one that had a promise attached to it. So do it. Mm-hmm. It's not saying the promise that was given to them is given to you, but I think it almost would make it a principle at that point. That if you honor your parents, they're benefiting them.
Okay. Here's another one that people hang their hats on that we're asking the same question of, and I'm sure you've thought about this, but the book of Proverbs says, child in the way he should go. How's this start? Train up a child, thank you. And the way that he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. Promise or principle? I mean, there are people on both sides of the aisle in that. Is that an absolute promise? In other words, if a child walks away from the Lord, then the parents blew it somewhere. If it's a promise, that's what we have to assume.
But you got the child has free will.
Right.
I mean, you can train up the most godly child every way that Scripture tells you, and that child has to make that choice eventually which way they want to go.
But the proverb says,
right,
when he is old, he will not depart from it.
Because he'll come back.
Yeah,
so
it would be like almost the perfect parenting. Well, not the perfect parenting, but if you train your child the most right way, yeah, maybe you won't stray. I mean, all.
Now, obviously, I'm not going to mention examples, but I'm sure all of you know of one. You can think of a parent that you would say was a godly person. Kevin's not a parent yet. A godly person who has a son or a daughter that has gone astray. I mean, I can think of a couple. Am I alone? Can everybody in here think? Okay, so the question, I guess, is, did they do it wrong? Or is that a principle more than an absolute promise? You got to consider that. Now, here's another thing that we have to throw into the mix in regards to the commandments. Everywhere else that you go in the book of Deuteronomy where there are promises tied to the law, it was to the law as a whole. So here's the question. If the commandment number 5 says that thy days may be long upon the land of the Lord thy God giveth thee, but you're a murderer, are you going to have... I mean, I understand that they're all kind of tied together. In other words, if I kill someone, I'm not honoring my parents. But at the same time, the question is, if I've honored my parents in every way, but I've blown it in one of the other 10 commandments, will I still, am I ruining my chances of the promise? See, I think that the thing that we can't forget is the 10 commandments are tied together. You know, New Testament says if you've broken one, you're guilty of all. And so we've tied these together. So I think that in some ways, we have to keep the whole total picture together in regards to that. It's not a standalone promise, I don't think. I think that there are some other things tied to that, and there's a lot of promises that people claim in Scripture that have contingencies on them. God said many times, if you do this, this is what I will do for you. And so there's contingencies on those things. And there are some strings attached. So anyway, that's something to consider as we go through this. Now let's read through our opening paragraph here. This is the point in the Ten Commandments when the emphasis turns from our relationship with God to our relationship with people. The foundation of all law is a proper relationship with Almighty God. Once this aspect is understood and settled, then we can firmly understand the next foundation of biblical law. In it, we see that the family relationship is a second key aspect of proper government on earth. When parents follow the principles in the Bible for raising children, and when parents themselves submit to the authority of the Bible, the need for civil government drops off significantly. And the whole reason, again, why we have such a need for law is because, for the most part, in our country, for example, this is worldwide, but for in our country, for example, parents have dropped off all responsibility of their children to government schools. So we drop our children off at a school and we say, train them, teach them, and they spend 8 hours there under their philosophy, under their worldview. Then they come home after spending 8 hours with people their age who are as dumb as they are, and they get all their input from people as dumb as they are. They get all their counsel from people as dumb as they are. Then they come home after 8 hours, and mom and dad are exhausted from a day's work, so they take it easy in front of the boob tube. We all sit there glassy-eyed till it's time to go to bed. We put our kids in bed. We pray with them together for 2 minutes, and we expect everything to come together at the end of their life. 18 years old, these kids are going to sail into a godly life now. And you know where we've gone wrong. And it doesn't have to do just with Christian people. Obviously, our country has bought into that philosophy. And our government is the one that is the agency that is now teaching our children. And if you think our government is going to do the best job that God would want them to do, then I need to talk to you afterwards. You got some things to straighten out. You look at some of the things that our school systems across our country are teaching. You look at some of the colleges. You look at Yale University, just as it's going through right now. They're allowing, not only allowing, but promoting a man who is a terrorist in their school, allowing him the freedoms, and he actually attacked 10 people because of their position on campus, against Allah or his religion, and he attacked them. But he's allowed to roam freely. He's allowed to do whatever he wants. And Yale defends that and says it's a right of his to do that. I kind of disagree with that. But then you go to our public schools. If you go to Greece and you go into some of the classes, you know that they're not going to teach biblical principles. In most places, they're not even allowed to mention creation. They're not allowed to mention God. They're not allowed to mention Jesus Christ. Therefore, they're going to take on a worldview, an unbiblical one. And that's where we are now sending our kids. And we're going to send them there for 8 to 10 hours a day. If they take sports, they're going to be there for 10 hours, 12 hours a day. And then we're hoping for the best when they turn 18.
Is that guy an actual terrorist?
He was a spokesman for, what's the name of the guy we haven't caught yet?
Osama
bin Laden. He was a spokesman. Now, he will say a few things against him. But it's a little bit late for that because he has said a whole lot in promotion of him in the recent past. What's that? Yeah. Well, my question is, what's wrong with the students there? I don't get that. He could attack 10 of them and he walks away. They need to lift some weights. Okay. Back into this paragraph, the New Testament reiteration of this commandment also shows the second most important relationship in the lives of people, that of family. The first relationship was one with God, Commandments 1 through 4. The second is the family, Commands 5 and 7. And the third relationship was with all other people, Commands 6, 8, 9, and 10. The fifth commandment is repeated in the New Testament, Ephesians 6:2. We've already quoted that just a couple moments ago, or someone else did. Thank you. The commandment is to honor is prefaced by the commandment for children to obey their parents. And Ephesians 6:1, again in light there. Obedience must be learned young so that honor can be given later. And again, we're going to get into some of this, but parents are too worried about being friends of their kids. They're too worried about impressing their kids and being cool mom and cool dad that they don't do what they're supposed to do. Then they wonder why later on at the age of 14, 15, 16, okay, let's go back, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, they wonder why that the children no longer honor them. They don't respect them in the way they respond, in the way they behave, and the things that they do, and they wonder why. And, yeah, they built a friendship, but they did not do what was most helpful for that child. If we were to teach our children obedience young, the honor comes later. The key behind this obedience is spiritual in nature, because the text says, in the Lord, Ephesians 6. Not just from natural affection or fear. God makes clear that when someone does not honor their parents, they do not honor God either. And God ties those things together in Leviticus 19. Ye shall fear every man his mother and his father, and keep my Sabbaths. I am the Lord your God. God put two things, honor parents through fear and honor God through obeying the Sabbath, on equal ground in the verse, showing that one cannot be done without the other. In this thing of, and we're going to talk about this in a moment as well down below. Let's work toward that direction. Categorical laws do not explain the consequences or penalty for breaking them. Commandment 2 had an undetailed warning by reminding us that God would visit the iniquity of the fathers upon the children under the third and fourth generation of them that hate me. This was a generic warning in regards to all the commandments, as the very next verse also said, in showing mercy unto thousands of them that love me and keep my commandments, plural. Commandment 3 warned us that the Lord will not hold him guiltless that taketh his name in vain. This again is a warning that does not tell how God will do this, or even what it means to be held guilty. So they're generic. And at the same time, there is going to be some of these commandments, like this one, that mentions or hints to a blessing to those that are obedient to the commandments. This is also generic, not listing how God will bless the people. Commandment 5 told the Hebrew people that they need to honor their parents so that their days may be long upon the land, which the Lord thy God giveth thee. So let's take a moment to look at what it means to honor, defining the concept of honor. And the definition of honor is, quote, to be heavy, to give weight to. And that's what it means to honor someone, to give weight to someone. In other words, when they say something, you respond to it. And maybe you can think of, I would guess, and I don't know all of your backgrounds, but some of the guys that are a little bit older in here probably knows what it's like to have a very stern father. How many of you would say you had that in your life? And very stern. But now, there are others that I know of that have fathers that are really very soft. Not an authority figure. Basically, mom will wear the pants of the family. They're pushed around a little bit. And I would say that, obviously, there are times you can think of people that you honor more than others. Someone that you give more weight to. I would guess that most people here, if Pastor Grace were to come in here and ask someone to do something, that everybody would jump up and say, I'll do that for you. And then obviously, there might be some other people that could come in the room to ask the same thing, and he might get one volunteer. So there are people that we give more weight to, and we will listen to what they have to say more readily. The working definition, honor is a decision that we make to place high value, worth, and importance on another person by viewing him or her as a priceless gift and granting him or her position in our lives worthy of great respect. And love involves putting that decision into action. And so that's what it means to honor. To honor our mother and our father would be to place high value on them. In other words, they would not be the brunt of your jokes. They're not when you are with your friends or when someone's with their friends. If someone started picking fun at their mom or their dad, they would not join in with it. They would defend them. And I love to see parents and children when they get along well. I've been in youth ministry now for 12 years, And I've seen all kinds of relationships with moms and dads. I've seen abusive ones on both directions. Children of their parents. I had a young man in Michigan who used to be physically abusive with his mother. And we dealt with that. And he had a temper, but he was physically abusive with his mother. I've also seen parents being physically abusive with their kids. Both situations, very sad. Very sad that that there cannot be peace in a good relationship between mom and dad and the children. I've also watched great relationships. I love to watch relationships with some of the students that I have in our ministry. I've often gone to like Craig Burrett and said, Craig, you got to tell me what you did. I've got three daughters, and Craig's two daughters are just, they're phenomenal and just great people. And I told him at one time, I sat down with him in the cafeteria, the cafe, and I said, Craig, you got to tell me what you did. You know, how did you get your girls to be so responsive to you, to show you such respect, to speak of you so highly when you're not around? I mean, they're not trying to impress anybody. They just think very highly of him. And all he could say was, you know, it's God. God did it. Like, that doesn't help me any. I know God does it, but you got to give me some practical, you know, stuff here where the rubber meets the road. Give me some ideas. And but I watch some of those relationships, and it just thrills my heart to watch when a child, a teenager, who usually is too afraid of what everyone else thinks, for a teenager to go up in a church service or whatever and kind of give their parents a hug, just sit down and talk with them when all of their friends are over there and they're willing to do that, or when a student wants their parent to come on an activity with them, that speaks volumes to me. That says a lot to me about that relationship. And it's a student or it's a teenager giving weight to, a child giving weight to their parents, honoring them. Letter B, understanding the concept of honor. Honor is the specific command, not obedience. So honor is the specific command. The original command does not say, children, obey your parents. And honor includes obedience, but obedience does not necessarily include honor. In other words, we can obey our authorities with a bad attitude, but we cannot honor our authorities without obeying them. And that is true in the parental relationship. A child can obey, but not honor. But a child cannot honor without obeying. You cannot do that opposite direction. The internal attitude weighs heavily in God's sight. And you've probably heard the old saying, a song and a dance. And my mom used to use that terminology. You know, it's you don't like what they just told you to do, and you stomp your foot, and you turn around, and you walk away mumbling to yourself. It's a song and a dance. And for a child to obey mom and dad, turn around and do what they're supposed to do, but slam the door, reeks of dishonor. But a child could also calmly do what they're supposed to do and honor their parents. You cannot take the two apart. The same thing in Michigan. I remember I used to do surveys with the kids, just checking on their relationship with their parents. It was all anonymous. I didn't have them put their names down. And to see what, you know, the destruction in some of the homes that they would describe, punching holes in walls and breaking things when parents don't let them do what they wanted to do. But that is, you cannot honor someone without obedience, but you can obey without honoring. So those two kind of go together. Number two, on the top page 72, this commandment was given in its original form to grown adults. It was given to grown adults. God was writing it to the adult population of the Hebrew people. This was not a Sunday school lesson to a third and fourth grade class. So this is what we learn from this. Honoring our parents is a thing regardless of age and regardless of where you are in life. Honor is something that goes with that position. I don't have to obey my father anymore. My dad does not tell me how to live my life. My dad does not tell me what I'm supposed to do. But I still honor my father. And so the original command given was for honor, and it does not have anything to do with living under their roof. It has to do with their position. And so I need to honor my father, and I need to do that not in obedience, but just in attitude and giving him the honor and the respect that he deserves. That could include simple things of, for example, me calling him. Now, he's not a good communicator, and he's not one who calls very often. But I got to be honest with you, I'm not real good at getting on the phone and just calling people either. And but an honorable thing is for me to give him a call. And it might be something simple there, because it's giving weight to him. It's letting him know that he's still important to me. I still do get his counsel on things. Number three, to better understand the concept of honor, we must better understand the word dishonor. The concept is something or someone that has little worth, weight, or value. And I'll give you some of the ways that this is true and how this is shown in Scripture. Letter A, dishonoring parents is exhibited through physically striking them. And this is what we talked about just a moment ago. But Exodus 21:15 says, "He that smiteth his father or his mother shall surely be put to death." God didn't put up with that. And I think there would be some really different homes today if we still lived under biblical law. You know, families, maybe it'd be like a little more like China, where they would tell you how many people you had in your family. The families would probably be a little bit smaller if we were still under physical or the biblical law. So we dishonor parents through physically striking them, hitting them, responding in a physical way. And I know that happens. I can't ever imagine, I'm going to tell you something, I would not be here today if I ever tried to strike my dad. My dad was a very calm person, but I also know that I've seen my dad get angry. And before my dad was saved, he was a very angry man. And he and my uncle, they joined hockey teams for one reason, because it was physical. And they got their hockey team kicked out of a league from constant fighting, brawls. And I don't think my dad knew how to skate, but my dad would go to bar rooms for what? Man, because, well, he liked to drink, but man, he was looking for something to do. And he was a brawling man. I watched my dad and I saw my dad and I thought, I'm smart enough not to do anything like that. And I'm not going to try and swing at him. I'm not going to try and push him. And you know what? I still wouldn't do that to this day. And it's not just because I know he could tear me apart, because he could. But I respect that, and I respect him. And it ought not have anything to do, really, with the size of the father. It ought to have to do with just respect for their position. But that's something I learned very quickly. Letter B, dishonoring parents is exhibiting through cursing them. This could be done by cussing at them, in other words, verbally swearing at them, or number two, calling for bad things, in other words, a curse. Children will say, "Go to hell," or other people will say, "That's a curse. You're calling down for bad things to happen to someone. Well, I hope that this happens to you. I hope that..." And it's cursing them. It's calling down for some bad things to happen to someone. And God says we ought not to do that. We're dishonoring our parents by doing that. In so doing, children are attempting to enlist God on our side against His representative. In other words, we're trying to get God to do something bad to the person who is His representative. He has chosen them in our lives. And we're asking God to displace them. Exodus 21:17, "He that curseth his father or his mother shall surely be put to death." Not even maybe, but surely. God, again, took this very seriously. Proverbs 20:20, "Whoso curseth his father or his mother, his lamp shall be put out into obscure darkness." Proverbs 30, verse 11, "There is a generation that curseth their father and doth not bless their mother. There is a generation that are pure in their own eyes and yet is not washed from their filthiness." Yes, Josh?
What does it mean by his lamp shall be put out in the darkness?
What is
reference to, like, sin and the darkness of, or, like, if God has mentioned this, like, the father's light, that, like, children distance from God?
I think there's just a couple things that could be. I think that's obviously part of that. That's a good possibility. The testimony, that would be a, I would say that'd be a little bit more of a spiritual application to it. And it could be a physical thing. Their life being put out. So there's a couple things that there could be to that could be in that. Does anybody else have? Go ahead.
He used to tell me he was going to put my lights out.
Yeah. Did he ever do that for you? So yeah, there's a couple things that could be. And again, as you mentioned, Josh, I think that could have to do with sin, too. I think Romans chapter 2 definitely alludes to some of that, where you are given over to more things, getting worse and worse. Letter C, dishonoring parents is exhibited through robbing them from their possessions or honor that they deserve. Proverbs 28:24, whoso robbeth his father or his mother and saith, it is no transgression, the same is the companion of a destroyer. And maybe some of us have taken something from the dresser of our mom or our dad, or the purse from our mom or our dad without asking their permission first. And you say, well, that was 30 years ago. It ought to still be taken care of. You ought to go to your parents. It's more honoring for us to go to them. You say, well, they don't even know about it. You know what? Honor would come when us saying, hey, you know what? When I was 10 years old, Dad, I want you to know that I was wrong for this. But I did take some money from your wallet, and I just want you to know it was wrong of me. I am going to give it back to you. Here it is. And he might say, you know what, don't worry about it. No, I am worrying about it because God brought it to my attention, and I'm going to deal with it seriously. And I'm asking for you to forgive me. That is honoring. You know what that does? A dad's going, wow, you're really sensitive to the Lord, and I appreciate that. Whenever someone comes to me and asks for forgiveness, my first response is always wants to be, don't worry about it. But you know what? It is something to worry about. Don't ever tell your children, it's okay. No, it's not okay. Okay? What you and I need to do is say, you are forgiven. Because that's the releasing point. For me to tell my child comes and says, Dad, what I did was wrong. I shouldn't have done it. Dad, don't worry about it. It's okay. No, because what I'm saying is, what you did was might be wrong, but don't worry about it. It's really okay. What I should be saying is, I forgive you for that. Thank you for being sensitive to God's leadership. Because that encourages the child or the other person, whoever it might be, to continue following that pattern of dealing with sin. And for me to tell someone it's okay, and their mind sends confusion, I guess it wasn't such a bad thing. Maybe I don't have to deal with that so seriously next time. Kind of embarrassing anyway. And so we need to be careful of that. Letter D, dishonoring parents is exhibited through nonverbal expressions of disdain, hate, or mockery. Proverbs 30:17, the eye that mocketh at his father and despiseth to obey his mother, the ravens of the valley shall pick it out, ooh, and the young eagle shall eat it. Now, whether that is obviously a picture of something, I haven't seen that happen, and I know some people have done this. Have you ever rolled your eyes at your parents? Maybe they didn't even see it. Let me tell you something. For those of you who have children, you understand this. For those of you who don't yet, your time's coming. That obedience is a lot easier to deal with than honor, attitude. When a child obeys what I tell them to do, but yet they do it with a... You know what? It's harder to deal with. Because they've just done what I told them to do. They went and did the dishes, but they did it with a bad attitude. And you still need to deal with that. But it's a whole lot more difficult to deal with than them just outright disobedience. Because then I know what I'm supposed to do. I mean, but it's a lot different. And I'm sure that probably all of us, maybe it's not our parents, but maybe it's our employer, they tell us to do something and can't believe it. And it's the mocking eye. I'll tell you, it does, for those of you who've ever had that done to you when you've given a command and you see someone go, no, brother. You know what they're going to do when they get close to their friends. They're going to bleed all over them. And it's frustrating. It kind of frustrates us. It angers us to see that. It's also hurtful. When I see, if I see my kids do that, believe me, I'm going to deal with it. They're going to know it. But it hurts as well to know that I asked them to do something and it was like, again. I can't tell you how many times we have the speech, the team speech. You know, I mean, we didn't hire mom to clean up after you. She is not the servant. She is not the maid. And, you know, if they leave, this is not illustrations from my house at all. If they leave their bowl after eating cereal on the table and they just walk away and I go, what about your, you're going to take care of your dish, right? And if they go, yeah, I guess. It's almost like, no, wait, hold up, like time out, or, team time out. If you don't take care of it, who is? Okay, all right, so we know you're thinking mom's going to take care of this. Why should mom clean up after your dirty dish? Why should she take care of it? She didn't eat out of that dish. So where's the teamwork here? Okay, time back in. Take care of it. And I don't know how many times you're going to deal with that kind of thing. And so often, it's not just the it's the attitude, and it's like, wait a minute, hold up. Why attitude? I don't understand. Mom didn't wear those clothes and throw them on the floor. You did. And so I often get a little confused on that. All right, letter E. Dishonoring parents is exhibited through lack of care for them later in life. Proverbs 23:22, hearken unto thy father that begat thee, and despise not thy mother when she is old. So despise her not when she is old. Matthew 15 also talks of that. And so it's obviously a way of honoring or dishonoring, however you want to look at that. If we either take care of or do not take care of our parents when they're older. You know, remember the song, and probably the older people do, Cats in the Cradle. Okay. And we know that the story of that is so true. The father did not have time for the son all of his life. And went and did his own thing, was too busy with work. Obviously, the son's going to have to understand. I've got to provide for the family. And life went on, and all of a sudden the father got older and thought, you know what, I really have not spent enough time with my son. Well, you know what, by then it was too late. The son said, you know, Dad, that'd be great, but I got some things, I got some bills to be paid, and I'm going to, you know, I got to take care of this stuff. And before you knew it, the tables were completely reversed, and the father wanted to spend time with the son, but now the son took on the same character traits, the same priorities that he had when he was younger. And then the father doesn't get any time either. And you know, it's exactly how it is. In our world today, the reason why we have to have a government take care of us when we get older is because parents have not taken care of their children when they were younger, because it reciprocates. If you and I honor our children, and I don't mean like do what they tell us to, but if we honor them by taking care of them, later on they will honor us by taking care of us. If we throw them to, don't get offended, if we throw them to daycare, and we throw them to everywhere else and have other people babysit and take care of and raise them, they're going to throw us to the old folks' home. And Pat's going to take care of us when we're there. Okay? It reciprocates. You wonder why we have so many of these homes that Pat takes care of? It's because children don't have time to take care of their parents, nor do they want to. Understanding that there are some situations that are beyond our control. We cannot take care of certain situations. It's 24-hour care. I understand that. But there are some people in some homes that are quite capable. If they had a child who was willing to love and honor them and take care of them, they don't have to live in one of those homes. I have a home right across the street from me. Man, it is a beautiful apartment setting. And it's just people who don't want to. I have a neighbor. Just a great lady, 75 years old. Husband just died last summer. And she's here all by herself. Why don't you move with your children? Well, they're kind of, I don't want to put them out. Put them out? Man, alive. If my mom was still alive, and she was living all by herself in some other state, and my dad had died, I'm telling you, I'd be saying, Mom, get over here and stay with us. What are you thinking? Now, if she didn't want to, that's up to her. But for them to put out the idea that it's putting us out, that's not honoring. And so that's something we have to consider on that. All right. The Bible gives some specific ways that a person can show honor to their parents. The following are a few examples. Letter A. Children honor their parents through making wise decisions. Proverbs 23:24. The father of the righteous shall greatly rejoice, and he that getteth a wise child shall have joy of him. Children honor their parents through acting wisely. Children honor their parents through sharing good news. Letter C. Letter D. Children honor their parents through avoiding immoral relationships. Proverbs 5, a great text on that. Letter E. Children can honor their parents by caring for them when they're older. We mentioned that briefly in the dishonor category. And you remember the situation when Jesus was on the cross and he looked at John and said to John, "Behold thy mother." And he looked at his mother and said, "Behold, woman, behold thy son." And from that day forward, remember, she went to stay with him. Jesus was concerned with his mother, and he took care of her. He honored her in that way. And John was a very willing person to take care of her. Letter F, children can honor their parents through listening to them. This means giving them respect of being a good listener through body language and eye contact. The word attend is used in the book of Proverbs 4:20 and chapter 5:1 in the context of a son and a father. The word means to prick up the ears or to give full attention to someone as if listening to emergency information. And I think we would do ourselves good to learn. Okay, Carol's not here. So us men, we need to learn how to listen. Listening is better when we give eye contact. We go into, you know what? Our world, our society is bent against this. I only know if people make fun of me for going to, what restaurant is it right up here? You're giving everything away. I'm thinking of. It's all breakfast all the time. It is Denny's. Yes, Denny's. People make fun of me. Teenagers make fun of me. They laugh at me. That's an old people's place. But you know what? It lacks loud. It lacks loud music, and it lacks televisions in every corner. You go to any restaurant today, and the televisions are everywhere. And you know what you're doing? Someone's talking to you, and you're kind of checking out the replays from last night's games. Oh yeah, yeah. And you're kind of looking up at the, and you and I have to learn better. Better listening skills. Put your back to the crowd if you can, because you're more distracted, more than likely, than the lady is. But parents and children, same thing. Given some scriptural examples there. Letter G, children can honor their parents through repentance and then obedience to a previously uncompleted task. And the illustration in Matthew 21 of the certain man who had two sons. One who said, "Yeah, Lord, Dad, I'll go and do it," and never went. And then the one who said, "I'm not going to go," but later repented and went and did what he was supposed to do. Now, top page 74, I want we have to understand something. Children are to obey their parents. They're also the original command to honor. We play a great role as adults in the whole setting of developing honor in children. One of the principles learned in Introduction to Biblical Law was this: where a relationship is mentioned in a command, other relationships are also implied. When children are commanded to honor parents, the parents are expected to love, provide for, and train the child. Page 17 of the notes. Even in the most recent statistics, parents hold the greatest influence in the lives of children, including teenagers. According to George Barna, in 2001, this is 5 years ago now, but still current, parents still ranked first in the quality and quantity of influence in their lives. Coming in second, 28% behind the parents were friends, the third most influential ingredient in the Christian faith, and fourth was the Bible. Parents take the lead role in developing honor. Now, I want to give these things to consider in developing honor. Number one is the responsibility of discipline. The responsibility of discipline. The child is to give honor, but it is the responsibility of the parents to teach this, for foolishness is bound in the heart of a child, but the rod of correction shall drive it far from him. When discipline of the child is properly administered, it will cause a honor, fear, and respect for the parent, and ultimately for God. And people often say, however a guy treats his mother, he will treat his wife. That's probably pretty accurate, but we also have to understand how a child treats his parents, how a child's also going to treat their heavenly father. And it's a pretty good picture of that. So foolishness is bound in the heart of a child. So therefore, a child is not going to naturally honor their parents. It's up to us to teach them. And I got to say this to you, that the most critical thing in discipline is consistency. And this is the hard part. For those of you who have kids, you understand this. Consistency is the difficult thing. There are times, there are days when you get frustrated, you get tired of the battle, and sometimes you want to just give up and not take care of something, or you become more lax on something. And that is where we start to get ourselves in trouble. Consistency is the key. I have the guy who discipled me, one of the guys who took me under his wing, Rick Garland. I remember visiting him when he was in charge of Word of Life Island. He was the director, and I was in his house, and he had two teenagers in his family. I would say 15 and 13 at the time, and they both came in at one point in the house while we were sitting there talking, and I was amazed at the honor that they showed their mom and dad. The way they listened to them, the way they responded to them, and at one point they asked to do something, and Rick had said, you know what, we're going to wait on that. Okay. That's it? Okay. And they were like, no problem. We're used to the screaming, hollering, kicking, ranting, raging kid that we see in the grocery store. And in talking to Rick, he said what it came down to is consistency. He said, first time, every time was our motto. When a child, when they already knew the law, then they broke the law, we dealt with it the first time. We did not say, next time, this is what's going to happen. Forget the warnings. And we have become kings and queens of warnings. And Rick said it became an issue of consistency. When they knew the law, they knew the rule, we dealt with it immediately. First time, every time, and it paid off for him. And now he has children that honor him. Letter B, when discipline is administered improperly, the parents can cause problems by provoking their children, which tears them down instead of bringing them up. Children can be discouraged through overbearing rules or a lack of direction and guidelines. Both of those extremes are dangerous. If we are so overbearing with every rule, that it's just like the Pharisees. They could not, the people, Jesus said, people can't live all the rules you're giving them. And if we're not careful in our homes and we give so many rules that the kids can't remember all the rules, they're going to become frustrated. They're going to become discouraged, as the book of Colossians says. But we can also be on the opposite side, not give enough direction and guidelines, trying to be too much of a friend to our kids. Colossians 3:21 gives a little bit of an explanation there as well. And the atmosphere in our homes is very important in the role of helping children. And we see that in Leviticus chapter 19, verse number 3. We're going to stop right there for a break, and we'll come back in 10. We're on letter C. It says this, when discipline is not administered at all, everyone pays the price. This neglect comes back to haunt the family and the society as a whole. And Eli was an obvious example of that. God said, I will judge his house forever for the iniquity which he knoweth, because his sons made themselves vile and he restrained them not. No discipline. And we know that to be a dangerous thing. Now, the second thing, we kind of mentioned this a little bit, in developing honor in our children, the second thing is the responsibility of the parents to teach. Now, this is one of those things where in order to develop the honor inside of a child, we have to spend time with them. Teaching takes time. We have to take time to do this. We cannot dish our kids off, even to the church, expecting the church to totally radically change our children for Christ. And believe me, as a youth pastor, I know this happens a lot. And parents think that in the hour they give me their student, I'm going to reverse 167 hours outside of church. And I'm going to make everything okay. And when things aren't going the way they should be and their child's not doing well, they're calling me up and asking me what's going on. And I'm saying, what is going on, Mom? What is going on, Dad? And a situation at North Star in which one of our Bible teachers was teaching on modesty and teaching on dating and why some of the principles of it that they should not be touching one another. That is biblical, right? And it's good for man not to touch a woman. Well, when that statement was made, this was a seventh grader. Went home, talked to Mom about it, just kind of telling what was going on in class. The next day, this student comes back to North Star and says to the Bible teacher, I want you to know that my mom disagrees with you. She says, and of course, anyway, I won't give you any information. She says that's all a part of getting to know somebody. Now that's going to a seventh grade. Now, anybody that has a half a brain, that's sarcasm, sorry. Anybody with a half a brain, if someone said something helpful to my child that would keep them out of trouble, don't go against it. We're trying to help, and yet they cut that down. And so there's a parent that's not teaching at home properly. Now, let me make this statement to you. Because there's many perspectives on this, but in regards to teaching, you can do it how God leads you, but you better study it out. You better know why you're going to do what you do. But we homeschool. Is that because I don't believe in North Star? No. I went to North Star. But I know this. There are still children getting together for 8 hours a day. And for me, personally... I gotta turn this on. For me personally, I think that we can do a better job for my kids. Maybe not for yours, but for mine. We have decided that we are going to homeschool. We have decided that we are going to invest that time in our children. Do I believe it's going to pay off? I do believe it's going to pay off. Do I think people are wrong for sending people to North Star? No. Because there are some situations where that's not... maybe it's not possible for them. But I think that we assume to send kids to public school or Christian school because that's the way our society does it. There are some people that have never even put a thought to homeschooling. They haven't even considered that. Oh, I could never do that. Well, you know what? Neither can we. We do DVDs. I mean, we sit, but our children are in our home. My wife works through homework with them. She is a teacher to them. I get the opportunity to go through some things with them, but they are in our home. They are around people who have the same values. We have the values we want them to have. They are not going to be getting their input and their advice from people who don't care or people who are as stupid as they are. Oh, nice way of putting it. Consider that. This is what I'm saying to you. You say, well, homeschooling might not be for us. That's okay, but you owe it to yourself to at least throw it in the mix. You have to consider that. By the way, and I'm not saying this because right or wrong, homeschooling is the only one really mentioned in the Bible. The Apostle Paul did go sit under Gamaliel. Okay, he went to college. But homeschooling is the way God did it in the Bible. Not that it's wrong to go to Christian school, but you and I have to at least consider that before we make the jump. For people to say, well, that's not for us, consider it first. Think through it. There is nobody that cares for my kids like I do. Not even their Christian Sunday school teachers in this church care for my kids the way I do. They will not love them the way I will love them. They will not discipline them, I promise, the way I will discipline them. Because it's not their responsibility to. And anyway, it's something that I could go on. I'm not going to. Number three, the responsibility of providing for the needs of children. That's how we're going to develop and foster honor. When the needs are not met, whether physical, emotional, or spiritual, the child will despise the empty hand. So if we are not providing for them, we are the ones that are fostering in them a lack of that. I was just reading this morning in my reading in 2 Corinthians chapter number 12. It says in verse 14, "Behold, the third time I am ready to come to you, I will not be burdensome to you, for I seek not yours but you. For the children ought not to lay up for the parents, but the parents for the children." Paul is speaking spiritually here. He is the spiritual father of the Corinthians. He led them to Christ. He is their father. And he is saying, you ought not to be taking care of me. So when I come into your presence, I'm going to be a tent maker. I'm going to take care of I'm not going to be a burden to you. I want to be a blessing to you. Because I need to lay up for you. You don't need to be laying up for me. But you know, the principle, although it's spiritual here, is also a relational one. In which the parents, you and I, or I as a parent, I have to be meeting the needs of my children. If our children, if we want to develop honor in them, they have to have their needs met. 1 Timothy 5:8, "But if any provide not for his own, especially those of his own house, he hath denied the faith and is worse than an infidel." And there are many other examples of that. Number four. The responsibility of providing counsel to the children regarding decisions in life. And that is a way of fostering in them honor, to give them insight. I used to think my dad knew everything. Every time I asked him a question, didn't matter what it was about, he had an answer. And it was usually a good answer. And I used to think, how does he know everything? Now, come to find out, he really doesn't. But growing up, I thought he did. But he'd always have some counsel for me. He'd always have an idea. He'd have some wisdom for me. And it was helpful for me. I could go to him and I would ask him questions. Without me knowing it, I was honoring him and letting him know that I thought highly of his input. But it was also helpful to me. And it developed an honor. I honored him for that. Parents should give general instruction in life. Again, not leaving that up to the church, not leaving that up to the school, but actually instructing and teaching our children. Letter B, parents should give marital instruction. There were laws regarding betrothed daughters. And there was some, in not getting into detail into this area, there was a lot of input of the parents in the future marriage of their children. There was a lot of input. There was the dowry that was paid. The groom or the father of the groom would pay a price. And that price was basically a way of securing the lady and giving, I don't want to use this word in the wrong way, but insurance that she would be taken care of. And if something happened to the husband, she had something. And it would be an inheritance for the children. There was a dowry that was given. You remember that Jacob, remember he worked all those years to get Rachel and got deceived. Remember the night of the wedding? Woke up with Leah. And, well, that wasn't right. So he worked more years to get the woman he was supposed to have. Then he had two. It's just not his original intent. He got what was coming to him, okay? He was a deceiver and he got it all back to him. But it was a dowry. I remember the David. Did y'all remember David's dowry to get Michael, King Saul's daughter? The foreskins of 100 Philistines, that wasn't supposed to be possible. And but it was something that, now obviously it's a different kind of dowry. It's not going to make his wife any money. But the concept was he was paying for that. He was putting his life on the line for that. The parent can and should provide insight and experience to the child in regards to the decisions in life. Over time, the insight should become more passive, teaching the child how to make wise choices instead of having the choices made for them. When the parent provides this timely advice, it promotes honor for them in the heart of the child. The greatest honor to a parent is to have the child grow into a mature, God-fearing Christian person. For 3 John chapter or verse number 4. All the time, energy, and work is worth it all when a parent witnesses the godly fruits of righteousness in the life of their children. When the parents follow God's blueprint, the child will in turn honor the parents for the rest of their lives. One of the final things that Jesus did to his mother, and we mentioned this already, was instructing John to take care of her as he would his own mother. Honor, like all other virtues, reciprocates naturally to the one that generously grants it to others. Now let's look at the fallout, the consequences surrounding this commandment, the positive effects of obeying this commandment for the child. The child could look forward to a full, healthy life. Whether you see that as a promise or how you see that. The child will gain a good testimony and reputation among those that know them. The positive effects of obedience to this commandment on the parents can be clearly seen in the effects on the children. And a wise son makes a glad father, but a foolish son is the heaviness of his mother. The negative effects of disobeying the commandment for the child, the breaking of this commandment, resulted in capital punishment. Again, the difficult aspect of this was that the parents were to take an active role in this process. This was true in all of the capital punishment cases that we've seen to this point. The person that was accusing, or the person that was a witness to a crime, was the first to take part in capital punishment, putting the person to death. Now, this is a whole new realm. I can understand a little bit seeing Jeremy do something wrong and me saying, okay, Jeremy, here it goes, brother. You're dead. And I get to throw the first stone. You were wrong for what you did. But then looking at my child, Caitlin, and saying, you didn't honor me. I'm taking you to the elders and you're dead. I mean, that's difficult. Let me tell you, this is where judgment cannot be clouded by our emotions. God said if a child dishonors you, they are to be put to death. That's not an easy thing. And you know what? I can guarantee you this. If I still lived under God's law, and I knew that if my child dishonored me, I'd have to put them to death, I am going to work very hard at developing honor in my child. You see where the responsibility comes back to the parent? If I know I have to take part in their execution, if they dishonor me, I am going to be wholly committed to developing honor in them. I ought to be as committed to helping them develop honor in them now as if I was under God's law. That's commitment. I ought to do that. So they were responsible for that. Deuteronomy 21:18 is the example of that, and I think we've read it in another case law. If a man have a stubborn and rebellious son that will not obey the voice of his father or the voice of his mother, and that when he hath chastened him will not hearken unto them... And let me just say this, brings up a good point in here, in that this was not necessarily a one-time thing, this was a pattern in his life. Verse 19, then shall his father and his mother lay hold on him, and bring him out unto the elders of his city, and unto the gate of his place, and they shall say unto the elders of his city, this is our son, he is stubborn and rebellious, he will not obey our voice. He is a glutton and a drunkard, and all the men of the city shall stone him with stones that he die. So shalt thou put away evil from among you, and all Israel shall hear and fear. We'll get into that next week as we talk about capital punishment, but again, obviously capital punishment has its benefits. Not only does it purge the society of those who are evildoers, but it also develops fear in me. As I watch someone put to death for doing whatever it was. All of a sudden I'm going, I'm not going to do that. And I learned from that. The framework of the law, any case laws that would be found under this commandment, and there's a few, there's not as many case laws. Some of these things were covered under the first point. There's an ant there if you want to take care of that for me. sorry about that. I didn't mean to flick it on you. But many of these were covered under the first point, but there's a few things that we want to cover under the framework, some of the case laws. The Bible clearly delineates those who are to receive honor in our lives. Number one, we're to honor God. That's an obvious thing. Malachi 1:6 says, a son honoreth his father and a servant his master. If then I be a father... Where is mine honor? And if I be a master, where is my fear, saith the Lord of hosts unto you? And so, God is a father, and he's expecting the same honor that we would give to our earthly father, and even more so, he's expecting that honor. Number two, We are to honor our elders. And that brings 2 points. Number one, those that are older than we are. That's an elder, someone who is older than us. And I don't mean, you know, a couple months. We're not talking about someone, I'm a day older than you, you better respect me. Obviously, we're talking about someone who is, we'll just put it gray-haired, someone who is older than we are. You know, that generational thing. There are people that deserve our honor and respect. There are some great people in our church that ought not to be ignored. They deserve our respect. They deserve our honor. They're older than we are. We ought to hold the door open for them. We ought to honor them by talking to them, giving them the eye contact, all the things that we've talked about. You know, sometimes we get so busy in our little cliques that we ignore some of those people in the church. And those are some of the people that could be encouraged the most. And, by the way, could encourage us the most. There are some of those people that we would do ourselves well to spend time with them. Every summer we try to get our teenagers together with the Saints Alive group. And we usually do a picnic. We serve them lunch. We spend time playing games. Get smoked in bocce by some of these guys. I don't know. I think Ron Gianetto just hangs out at the bocce court and just plays all day. But we got to do that. And we got to spend time playing games with them all afternoon. We got to eat with them. We got to serve them food. We interviewed them. We asked them questions. The teenagers get to sit down with some of them and ask them some questions about their life. What are some things I can learn? And it's a time. Let me tell you, we hear more comments from them after those days than anything else all year long. And they just love spending time with the teenagers. And those people deserve that. So people that are older than us. Leviticus 19:32 says, "Thou shalt rise up before the hoary head and honor the face of the old man and fear thy God. I am the Lord." So that respect. And we've lost that. We've lost respect for various things. Some things aren't in the Bible, but it's obvious. You know what I'm saying? You don't go into a church service in your shorts.
Yeah.
Now, I know that's not in the Bible. I know the Bible doesn't say you shouldn't do that, unless you're showing your thigh too much. But you're not supposed to do that. I just think that that's a common sense thing. For a guy to come into a church service with his hat on. Not in a church service right now, so we're okay right now. It's not right. And you know what? Again, you can say, "Well, that's not in Scripture, so just eat it. Be quiet. Live with it." Okay, I understand. But there are certain things that you do. Why do you still stand up for the Pledge of Allegiance if all these things? That's not in the Bible. And the Bible doesn't tell me to put my hand over my heart when the pledge is being given. But I still do that. I don't go to a professional sports game and go, "I'm just going to sit down." I don't do that. There are certain things that are common sense. And to rise up before the hoary head, in other words, to stand up as if it was a military. The president walks into a room, everyone stands up. The bride starts to walk down the aisle, everyone stands up. And the Bible says you ought to give some respect to the elders. And they deserve that. But not only that, letter B is also those that are church leaders. We ought to respect our pastor. And by the way, some of you may have grown up with Pastor Grace, and I know people who have. And so it's a little bit difficult, but I don't like hearing someone say, "Hey, how's George doing today?" Mm-hmm. And I always go, "Who? Who are you talking about? I don't know who George is." And you will not catch me calling him George. Now again, there are some people that have grown up with him as their youth pastor, and so my teenagers will call me Vinny, they'll call me whatever, and I understand that they grew up with him like that, but to me, I still think things have changed. He's the senior pastor. Is that in the Bible? No. But it's a way of respecting him, Pastor Grace, or pastor. I just think that that's the right thing to do, and honoring our church leaders. Number three is to honor our parents. That's obvious. That's what we've been given. Number four, we're to honor our civic leaders. So whenever Steve comes in, whenever Ben comes in, we ought to stand up and salute, throw him a quarter or something. And no, I'm just kidding. But we are to honor them, our civic leaders. And we got to admit, some of that comes natural, doesn't it? You see a police car behind you, does your foot not come off the gas a little bit? Come on. And you know what? If you're not guilty, why worry? But at the same time, it's a natural response. Your eyes go to your speedometer. You start to look around. Is our car going a little bit faster than me, I hope? You know, your foot comes off. It's interesting to see someone usually who's speeding by me, and all of a sudden you see the brake lights come on. I'm going, oh, that's like a radar detector must be, you know. You see that brake light come on. Some of that's natural like that because of their position and what they can do to you. But obviously some of it should also be just as a way of showing them the respect. They are there for our good. And that's helpful. Letter B, we cannot dismiss our responsibility to honor and care for our parents. The Pharisees tried to do this through the excuse of giving to the temple so much that they could no longer had enough money to take care of their parents. That was the basic concept in Matthew chapter 15. And they thought it was all right that they taught. They taught this concept in the temple, obviously for selfish reasons. Jesus condemned the idea and confirmed the necessity of honoring parents, regardless of our age. And it's one of those things where we need to be willing to take care of the needs of our parents. Another case law, other laws regarding the family, the protection of widows and orphans. That is something, 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse number 3. Let me also say this, something that's not in the notes, but and this is, some of these, I should have probably put them in, but common sense. I can't list all of the case laws, but common sense. Leviticus talks about not putting our children in for prostitution. I mean, do we even need to mention that? But there were, and God's very clear about that, Leviticus 19, verses 29 and 30. That was illegal. It was against the law. God said, you do not do that. The other issue was inheritance. There was an inheritance. And you know that the oldest child, and usually the oldest male child, was given the double honor. And the reason for that really came down to this. That oldest child was going to be responsible for the family if something happened to dad. Therefore, he needed to have some way of taking care of that, some resources. That came through the inheritance. If that child, which was why it was so bad for the prodigal son to go and waste it all, because he no longer had the money to take care of the family anymore. He not only affected himself, but he wasted the money that was intended to help take care of the family if dad died. So that the double honor, he was given that money for that reason, to help take care of the family. It was a way of supplying the needs for that in the future. And so that just meant that he was supposed to take care of that. He was responsible as the oldest child. It is so sad how many families fight when it comes down to the will. And families literally split. And my wife's family, my father-in-law is just, he doesn't even want to face the time when it comes to my mother-in-law's family. She's basically going to take care of the will. She said, I don't want anything to do with it. Take my name off of it. I don't want anything to do with it. Because there's already bickering and fights going on about where the money's going to go. You know, and the intention of the will is to put the money in the right directions, but the executor has to get beat up by the rest of the family first. It's happened on my dad's side of the family. My uncle gets the cottage. What about all of us? Oh, wait a minute. That ain't right. You can't do that. Well, what about the house here? All of a sudden, people are fighting over it. You know, here sits my grandma, still alive, and still very healthy, watching her kids fight over her money. And dishonorable, very dishonorable. But anyway, so it's the issue of the inheritance. That's something that would fall under these case laws. Number two under there, under letter C on page number 80, the families were to be perpetuated. That was one of the case laws that that you could get into some detail on, and they used this in their arguments against Christ. The Sadducees did, and what happens if this guy dies and his the wife didn't have any children? Well, the brother-in-law was supposed to take care of. But there were some issues there. And that we have some of the issues of families being perpetuated, Deuteronomy 25. There were some laws on that, how that was to be taken care of by the closest of kin. And so that, just some things in that. We're not going to get into all of that due to time. The fixture of the law, discovering how this law still affects us today. The erosion of the concept of honor is the crumbling of the very foundation of biblical law. When the concept of family is destroyed or not supported, the society is headed for sure destruction. When the honor of parents is disregarded, so will the honor of civil authorities. Now, I throw some of these statistics in here because I thought they were interesting. In regards to some of the things regarding families in our nation, if you look at some of the demographics under number one, this was from the year 2001 in Youth Worker magazine, but you can see how the percentages have increased in these areas. A married couple with children has gone up 5.7%, so that seems encouraging. But how about a female only with children, up 25.4%. A male only with children, 61.8%. That tells you something about the direction that the women are going in our society. And I know someone in Michigan that was in our ministry when we were out there. The wife just started a relationship with a neighbor across the street. And really kind of dropped the kids off, said, you can have them. That doesn't make sense to us. That's not natural. But anyway, that's happening. look at, interesting, you see the breakdown of the family, the breakdown of communication under number two, USA Today. How many parents talk to their children, 8 to 15-year-old, about these subjects? Now look at the disparity in the responses. Parents, 59% of the parents say we talk to our kids about drugs and alcohol. 32% of the kids say that their parents talk to them about drugs and alcohol. And there's a problem there. Either the kids are not listening or the parents are lying. Bullying, puberty, guns in school. And there's a great disparity in the percentages. And so there's a problem there in the communication. Number four has some things about prison moms, the increase of women in prison. Past 20 years, the population in women's prisons has risen 650%. 70% of women in jails in prisons have at least one child under 18. And that's not going to do much good for the kids at home. And then of the 1.5 million kids with a parent in jail or prison, half will commit a crime before they turn 18. And so what the parents do, the children will take a step further. At the very, very bottom, I included this. This is from the Society for Research of Child Development. This is the way our society looks at corporal punishment or spanking and how that... basically, the article tells us that spanking will cause children to become more abusive. It will cause them to become more violent. They will take on the same concept, and that when things don't go their way, they will just start beating people. That's the basic concept behind the article. Let me say this, that could be true. If a parent does not properly discipline children, they do it in anger, that will happen. But if a parent, and this is the way we would do this, if our child did something worthy of a spanking, they would get sent to their room, and we said, we'll be there in a few minutes. That would give us time to think through it. That would give us time to cool down if we were frustrated. And then we could go into the room, calmly sit on the bed with our child, talk through it. This is what was going on. Tell us why you did this. And we'd talk through it. Then we'd deal with it. With the spanking, it was we'd hug, we'd sit there, and we'd... things would be done. And you know what? Our child was always closer to us when we were done. Something about that. They would want to stick by your side. They would want to walk around with you a little bit more. And so if it's done properly, it will not cause in a child to be abusive. And our society does not like that because it's biblical principle. And anyway, so that's what that article is included for. All right, any questions or comments tonight? Okay, this is what I want to do. I have the midterm here. Again, let me just remind you, you can take this home. It is not due until next Tuesday night before we start class. If you have, you were missing in class last week, if you could just take time first to fill out the homework. And once you're done with the homework, you can start the midterm. Once the midterm is started, please don't refer to your notes. It's not open notes. It's not open Bible. I don't think it'll be too much of a problem for most of you. I don't think any of you will be surprised with the content if you did the study sheet. All right? Any questions on that? Okay. That'll be that. Let's...